The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Anywhere you go, like in a Black community, you'll find very few grocery stores. And the thing is, not everybody has a car. Not everybody really is even near public transportation. And so people are left to just go to the liquor store, get what you can get. Or, you know what I mean? Or exactly. Go to 7-Eleven. It's like, it's almost like it's a trap. Because, exactly. You know, a lot of times you have substandard housing and then you just have garbage to eat. And so how are you supposed to maintain your health or even have a long life, you know?
You can't. Yeah. And the things that you put in your body is harmful. Mm-hmm. You know, the corner store food, it's not, you can't have a diet on that. Yeah. And then the other thing too is we have a lot of money in our community that people don't realize. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of money in our community, and that's kind of one of the in the last things that I'm kind of tying this all together is there's so many dollars that squeak out of our neighborhood and our communities within minutes, you know? And so I'm trying to build and develop on how to keep that in for longer than 2 hours or however long it says our dollars stay in our community where it's out.
Yeah. What's some ideas you have around that or things you thought about?
So right now, as me being the owner of the buildings in our community and the manager, so now I control who I hire. So I can hire the people in here. Now I control the businesses that go on the commercial floor. And so now I'm explaining to the people in our community of how we circulate our dollar. Mm-hmm. So for example, Sammy's, he's going to have his restaurant on the first floor, Black owned. Well, Sammy is going to be paying me rent. Mm-hmm. So when I pay rent, he pays me rent. I pay Tierra, who lives in the community, who's my manager, and Beryl, who clean up the building for me. I pay them that money Sammy gave to me. Mm-hmm. They take that money, they go buy a sandwich back at Sammy's, the money goes back to his hand.
Right.
Well, we hire Ty to wash dishes at Sammy's. So Sammy takes that dollar, pays Ty to wash dishes. Well, Ty then goes and his mom will go buy a sandwich. So we just getting people to understand how that exchanging that same dollar can go back and how that creates. And I don't think we haven't had an example of that to show people. And now that I have real live experiences of like, I can show people, this is what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And cause it's not just about me. It probably starts with me, but then as everything trickles down, it just keeps rolling, circulating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's tremendously important, but I mean, that shows the value of ownership though, right? Because you own, you know, if you will, the supply chain to some degree. And so you can put people in position. And I mean, I think it's important for people to aspire to do. Cause I mean, in this country, the power is in ownership. I mean, however you feel about it, that's just what it is, you know,
you got it.
Owning everything, you know what I mean? So owning the commercial space, owning the residential space, like owning everything and kind of taking that step and putting our people in position.
It is. And the ownership also allows me to start breaking some of the issues that we're having, with, you know, the felony box. Mm. When that box is checked, you ain't getting a job and you ain't getting an apartment. Well, what do you do? And so I do a deeper dive and look into it when staff brings me a few people that are looking for housing that have felonies or have some things on their record. I look at it and not in a robotic form of felony, boom, you're out, denied. It's an automatic denial. And so, well, I look deep into it of like, well, how long ago was this? What was it? Have they been in any trouble after? Can you get me some letters of recommendation of counseling you've been doing or anger management classes you've been taking? Somebody that vouch you, your job, your employer, whoever it is. And then, take that into consideration.
Yeah. No, I respect that. I think, you know, sometimes people just need a second chance. You know, sometimes you just make bad decisions, sometimes multiple bad decisions. But I mean, here's the thing. If someone doesn't give you an opportunity, it's probably a great chance that you're going to be back in the street doing whatever you were doing, going back to prison and just repeating that cycle if you don't have that opportunity. And I tip my hat to you because I mean, talk to countless people and most wouldn't have that stance. So I appreciate that you think of it in that way.
And knock on wood, every single person that I've gave a chance to hadn't came back. They've actually been the best for me. They haven't, wow. They've been my biggest supporter.
Yeah.
They've got my back the most because I've given them an opportunity and they've stayed quiet.
Yeah.
I even ask, I call and ask, hey, how's Washington? Hey, Mr. George, we haven't seen him. We haven't heard from him. He dropped his rent off and he go back and sit in his room. And that was one of my things that they get a chance to talk to me. And I say, hey, you know, my mentor told me, give him another chance from you, but I can't give you a second chance.
Yeah.
This is it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can't have this. So.
Yeah, no, I respect that. So at the Commons, is it all affordable? Is it
all affordable?
Okay.
100%.
So there's a lot of misconceptions about affordable housing. What are some of them that you've heard that are not
true? It's the word affordable. You know, affordable is different to everybody. Affordable is different from Bill Gates to me. And, you know, affordable is affordable. But when you look at the numbers of what you need to do, I had to educate our community on like the first one coming in, the first building, you know, when they hear affordable, oh, this is, they have a different perspective of what affordable housing is and public housing. It's different. I do have to take Section 8 and other programs or whatever because I'm receiving federal money. I'm receiving grants. I'm receiving money from the city. I have to take their program. I can't take their money and say, hey, the programs you run, I ain't taking Section. I have to, you know, so the word affordable just kind of gets people in their mind of what it is. There's affordable housing in Beverly Hills, but it's about the AMI that's over there. Affordable might be a $3,000 one bedroom apartment. Well, that's affordable to that area, you know, so it just I think people get that mixed up with affordable housing and public housing. Affordable housing, you have to qualify. You have to have a job. I have to check your HR. They have to send me a letter. I have to check your paycheck. You have to qualify and be in this income. And it ain't low. It's a normal working people, people that work at the mall, people, teachers, you know, whatever that may be. That's who qualifies.
Right.
It's the missing middle. Because really, affordable housing is needed because if you're low income, you can get a house somewhere. If you're high income, you can go live wherever you want to live. Mm-hmm. But when you're a working person working every day that can't get a flat tire because that's going to throw your whole budget off and just snowball a chain of things, those are the people that need affordable housing.
Yep.
And they don't qualify. They make too much money to go in low income. They don't make enough to go live in Beverly Hills, wherever it is. So they call it missing middle. So that's the majority of the country. That's the majority of our nation is people in the middle. The ultra wealthy is only a few people. You know, most people are working every day, getting up at 8 a.m., coming home at 5.
Yeah, definitely. And AMI is area median income. Gotcha.
Just take a circle. So wherever our project is, boop, take a circle, pinch. What's everybody making right there? And then they do the calculations of here's how much. And then really it's from the census tract and all the, they give me, here's what you charge. It ain't like really me, you charge between this and this, this person has to make this between this and this much money. Mm-hmm. It's simple.
Got it. One of the other misconceptions that's spread a lot is that affordable housing is not profitable. So from a numbers perspective, how do you make it profitable?
Developer fee driven.
Gotcha.
Your cash flow margins aren't astronomical, mm-hmm. but at the same time, my cash flow is my developer fee is larger, mm-hmm. my cash flow is smaller, but my risk is smaller too. Mm. When you make more on cash flow, your risk gonna be higher.
Yeah,
you're gonna have money tied up in there.
Yeah.
So both is needed. I don't get the depreciation from my affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I trade that off from the equity investor, the tax credit investor. They get all of that. I get all the cash flow. I get the developer fee. I get all that, but they get the depreciation. So you receive large developer fees, mm-hmm. and you don't have any offset. Usually on the buildings that you have your depreciation, you can offset your income. I can't. So every penny I make on the affordable housing buildings, there's no offset for me from this building.
Gotcha.
Like normal.
Gotcha.
So it's just your business model of what you want, mm-hmm. and your risk tolerance. I think to me, it's developer fee driven. So I'm getting a fee included in the tax credits for building this building and hitting these benchmarks that the tax credit investor needs. He says, you know, we'll pay you 20% now, mm-hmm. at the beginning. Once the building is finished, we'll pay you another 50%. Once mm-hmm. you file your 8609, we'll pay you another 10%. Once you complete your occupancy, we'll finish the rest.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.